The Senate Business and Labor Committee will now come to order. Will the Secretary please take... Senate Energy and Telecommunications Committee, will the Secretary please call the roll?
This is March 18th, 2021. Vice Chair Small.
Here.
Vice Chair McNally. Senator Cuff.
Excuse, I think she'll be here. Finance and Claims, Justice Matt. She's probably doing that.
That's where she's at. Senator Cuff's excused.
Senator Gauthier.
Excused.
Senator Kerry. Senator Lynch.
He's excused.
Senator Molnar.
Excuse.
We don't know where he's
lost.
That's what I carry a vote for.
Senator Morjo.
Yep, he's excused.
Senator Pope.
Here.
Senator Regeer.
Here.
Senator Sweeney.
Here.
Senator Temple.
Yes.
Chairman Ankeny.
Here.
All right, so today in everyone's favorite committee, we have two bills up, and we will not be doing executive action at the end of this. There's no amendments back on anything. So we can start with, Representative Harvey still? Oh, there he is. Okay. Let's start with House Bill 494, sponsored by Representative Harvey. Please open on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. It's a privilege to be in front of you today. Today I bring you House Bill 494. This past year has been a stark reminder of the consequences of the digital divide in our state. Rural broadband is critical infrastructure, and it is necessary to growing our economy the same as roads and bridges. Investing in broadband creates jobs, allows small businesses to compete and grow, and increases equality in education for our students in every corner of the state. And we know that access to broadband is a game changer for rural places and tribal communities. The bill I'm presenting today will help us build up our state broadband infrastructure by implementing some of the barriers that prevent us from making efficient investments in it. This bill, one of the major challenges standing in the way of building up broadband infrastructure is that it costs a lot of money to dig and lay the fiber. In fact, a Federal Highway Administration report indicated that up to 90% of the costs of laying fiber is wrapped up in just digging the ditch. So my bill creates a state-level dig once policy. This bill would require the Department of Transportation to reach out to telecom companies when they're engaging in state road construction projects and give telecom companies the opportunity to come and lay the fiber while that construction work is being done, or conduit for the fiber to be put in later. Other states have seen success in a program such as this. Arizona, Minnesota, and Utah all have similar legislation. This reduces a major barrier in broadband expansion. And with this simple coordination between the department and the telecom companies, we can really bring some efficiency to this process and help get broadband to every corner of our state. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll finish my opening and be back up to close. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any proponents in the room? Okay. Do we have any proponents on Zoom?
No, Mr. Chair.
We have none on Zoom for...
Mr. Chair, they did not log on.
Okay. Do we have any opponents in the room? Any opponents on Zoom?
No, Mr. Chair.
Informational witnesses in the room? Oh, we have one.
Chairman, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of this bill. For the record, my name is Dustin Rouse, D-U-S-T-I-N-R-O-U-S-E, and I'm the pre-construction engineer for the Montana Department of Transportation. The two major requirements within this bill are similar to requirements within a soon-to-be-adopted federal rule in the Mobile Now Act. Since the Mobile Now Act was signed into law, MDT has taken steps to make the permitting process associated with the installation of broadband facilities within the state highways more efficient. Through this process and others, MDT staff have been working with staff from the Federal Highways Administration in an effort to better facilitate broadband installation. MDT did submit a decision package in our budget to request resources to be able to continue working towards greater connectivity in Montana. MDT requested one FTE to meet the pending new rule that state DOTs establish a broadband coordinator in accordance with the Mobile Now Act. This FTE will be predominantly federally funded. This decision package has passed through the budget subcommittee and would address the fiscal note that is attached to this bill. I'll be available if you have any questions. Thank you.
Okay. Now, you're more of a proponent than informational. Let's mark them down that way, if you would. Okay, thank you. Do we have informational on Zoom by chance?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay, questions from the committee. Senator Temple.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Mr. Rouse, please. Thank you, Mr. Rouse, for coming in. How much of this type of work is already, your system's already doing some of this type of work, or can you give us an idea what, you're already laying some conduit or working with this?
Yes, we are. Already, we already to an extent we coordinate with fiber optic companies and when you know typically they come in outside of our construction projects, and so that coordination that is specific to this bill, that if we have a construction project, we're not specifically reaching out to them to let everybody know that we have a construction project, other than we do have a published STIP that identifies all of our projects we're planning to do over the next 5 years. But right now we don't specifically identify every company that's out there that would be putting in fiber and let them know that we're going to have a project in a specific area. So there certainly is fiber that is installed in our right-of-way today, but this goes further than that.
Follow-up?
The
FTE that you're talking about, is he on the ground or is he in the office, or what's his job?
It likely would be both. We need somebody that's coordinating, and the FTE that we're asking for was really specific to the federal rule that's coming. There was a notice of public rule revision, and that went out, and it's going to revise. It'll add a rule to the Mobile Now Act. And as part of that, there's a list of different criteria that state DOTs have to meet, and one of those is having a designated broadband coordinator identifying all of the fiber optic companies and broadband companies and keeping track of them, making sure that we're reaching out and letting them know as I had previously indicated, letting them know all the projects that we have in the pipeline in our five-year plan, keeping a list of all of those broadband companies, and making sure that we're coordinating our work with their work so that if we're out there digging, we can coordinate that and allow them to do it at the same time.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions, committee? Oh, Senator Pope.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. A real quick question, please, for Mr. Rouse.
Mr. Rouse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Rouse, thanks for coming today. One would assume that there's a bunch of money to be saved by digging once. I don't know if you're going to be able to answer this. If there was an industry representative, it might be a little more appropriate for them. But to the degree you might have a comment, what kind of efficiencies do we get by coordinating this way? And then I have one follow-up question, Mr. Chair, after that. Thank you.
So if you're requesting a dollar amount, I don't have that. I didn't bring that with me. But as far as efficiencies, certainly if we're in doing our and typically in the way that the House Bill 494 is written, it's directed at if we have a reconstruct type project, if we're moving dirt, if we have ditches open, then certainly that's the opportune time to have the telecom companies in installing their fiber at the same time. Some of the impact if we don't coordinate, obviously is we've now reestablished our ditches, our vegetation, and then they come in after the fact. Then they're trenching through that. We have the potential for weeds again. We have to reestablish the vegetation, and then there's also risk of any of the culverts that we installed, those being trenched through as part of the installation process. And so if we can coordinate it, everything's open, they can see where our culverts are and anything that they would potentially impact, and so we avoid that type of issue. Also, in urban areas, certainly, where it's a finished reconstruct project, we have sidewalk, we have pavement, and certainly we don't want to go in and trench that after the fact.
Mr. Chair, just a quick follow-up, if I might.
Follow-up.
I think I know the answer to this question, actually, but once everything's in place, as per this bill, presumably if there was any kind of issue with broadband conduit or a pipeline, whatever, in the future, that's up to them. We're just trying to coordinate on the front end, and from then on, everything is just the same. The broadband companies have to keep their equipment running, and it's at their cost and all that stuff.
Chairman, Senator, yes, you are correct.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions, committee?
Appreciate it.
None? Seeing no further questions, Representative, would you care to close on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the good brief hearing. I won't reiterate to the committee the importance of broadband in our state, but I do feel this is a great bill to add some efficiencies to making sure that the process does move along just by this simple coordination with the Department of Transportation and the companies involved. So I would urge a due pass on this, and thank you for your time and consideration. Senator Lynch did say he would carry this if you guys choose to move this forward. So thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
All right, thank you. And that concludes the hearing on House Bill 494. Next up, we have House Joint Resolution Number 14. Representative Gardner, would you care to open?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. Frank Garner from House District 7 in Kalispell, and here today to present House Joint Resolution 14. And I want to start by just asking you a couple of questions to consider before we get into this House Joint Resolution and explain what it is and why. But have you ever in your life had to do these following things? Have you ever had to take a call from somebody whose house was on fire and make sure that the right people show up? Have you ever talked to somebody who's just found a family member who's committed suicide? Have you ever talked to somebody on the phone and walked them through CPR on a child? Have you ever took a call about a shooting in progress or a vehicle crash, or I could go down the list? And the reason I bring that up is because I'm here today to try to sing the praises of people who are often unsung, and that's those folks that are involved in the business of telecommunications, those folks in dispatch who are the single point of contact for most of our emergency services, whether it's police or fire or ambulance, and to let them know first that we appreciate all their service, but also how important we think it is for them to be properly categorized when it comes to the standard occupational classifications, and I'll explain why that's important as I go through the bill here in a minute. But one of the things I think we don't appreciate is the stress that those folks behind the phone, because we don't often see them. We talk to them, but we don't often see them, and we don't see the results of the stress and the effects that that job has on them, because a lot of them have to work 30-plus years in this occupation, and they don't often get to see the end result of the emergency that they're involved with. I can personally attest to the fact that they saved my life as a young policeman when I was involved in a fight with an individual that just got out of prison who drugged me with a vehicle down the road. The person that I was calling to for help and that got me help and helped save me was one of those folks in dispatch. And so their role is critical, and yet they're classified nationally as clerical workers. Now, why does that matter? Why that matters is because when we look at both the pay, the job conditions that they work at, their retirement benefits, and so on, we classify them in that role, and yet they work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, holidays, weekends, etc., and we fail to recognize them as first responders. And so there's a national movement afoot to try to recognize them, to try to reclassify them, and this resolution sets out to identify the folks in our federal delegation that we support that reclassification, and we support these folks in that role. And I'm hoping we're going to have some of them online that can talk a little bit about their job, the importance of this resolution and act, and how we can support them in what is a really difficult and stressful job. With that, I'd urge a due pass on this, and I look forward to hearing from folks on this resolution. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Representative. Seeing no proponents in the room, can we get our first proponent on Zoom, please?
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to remind those on Zoom, if they're wanting to speak as a proponent, to please raise your hands. The first one I have is Kimberly Burdick.
Thank you. Ms. Burdick, please. Ms. Burdick, you are muted.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Kimberly Burdick, spelled B as in boy, U-R, B as in David, I-C-K, and I am the director of the Scioto County Sheriff's Office 911 Center in Fort Benton. I began my 32-year career in this small two-position PSAP or dispatch center as a 911 dispatcher, and have progressed through positions where I am currently the director. I represent Montana APCO, the Association of Public Safety Communications Officials, as the chapter president. Thank you for considering this resolution on behalf of public safety telecommunicators in Montana. The resolution before you is powerful in that it shows Congress, and Congress as members of the public, the support Montana has for public safety telecommunicators. Similar to other first responders, public safety telecommunicators must answer the call, and they do first. They are the first responders. Public safety telecommunicators are critical to the process. Without them answering the call, law, fire, and EMS does not respond to a call. Public safety telecommunicators are at the heart of the circle of public safety response. According to the Office of Management and Budget, public safety telecommunicators as a profession are classified as clerical workers or secretaries instead of in protective services. Among the protective services occupations where we should be classified, there are crossing guards and lifeguards, TSA screeners, etc. It is astounding to me and to those working under the headsets to realize they are only considered as clerical workers. This is they receive and dispatch calls for suicides, homicides, domestic calls, administer CPR, medical, accidents, and the worst call, officer-involved shootings, which have tragically happened in Montana too many times over the past 2 years. According to the Office of Management and Budget, dispatchers don't administer actual care, just give advice and are not physically at the scene. While dispatchers are not physically at the scene, the images and stress incurred by administering instructions are as damaging as any experienced at the scene. The technology and training needed to work in this profession are as complicated as any profession. Yet, public safety telecommunicators love what they do. Next generation 911 will take it to the next level by the possibility of public safety telecommunicators viewing video of crime scenes or accidents, adding to an already stressful environment. We were pleased to see Senator John Tester as a co-sponsor on Senate Bill 1015. He has been the only representative to sign and support. We hope that with passage of this resolution, that it will send a message to Congress to resurrect the 911 Saves Act, since this bill died in the last session. The title for the federal bill is the 911 Saves Act, which is appropriate as public safety telecommunicators save lives. I respectfully urge you on behalf of Montana public safety telecommunicators to vote yes on this resolution. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Can we get the next proponent?
Mr. Chair, I have Jessica Graham.
Jessica Graham, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jessica Graham, spelled G-R-A-H-A-M. I'm a public safety telecommunicator and certified training officer of Choteau County 911. I am also a United States Navy veteran who understands what sacrifice means and dedicating yourself to the public. I serve the public. I am the first responder for you when you are in a crisis and need aid. In the eyes of the state and the federal law, I am considered a clerical worker or administration. A clerical worker does not do what I do. I am the one giving the location and obtaining the critical information needed to get the correct help to you. Often while you are living your worst moment, I am a calm voice on the other end, getting the police, firefighters, and EMTs to you. I am providing you with life-saving instructions or just reassuring you help is on the way. I am also sometimes the last voice someone will hear while they take their last breath. Telecommunicators talk people out of committing violent crimes and have talked people out of committing suicide. We guide you through CPR. Not only am I responsible for you, I am also responsible for keeping my law enforcement officers and other first responders safe by giving them accurate information when they arrive. A clerical worker won't hear a desperate teen say, "I don't want to live," and then pull the trigger. Nor will they hear a mother begging for you to save her child's life. When my shift is over, I don't just forget about my calls. I take them home with me. I wonder if they lived. I hear their pleas for her help while I kiss my children goodnight. I relive the wife begging for her husband of 60 years to breathe and telling me she can't go on with CPR, all while I keep urging her and telling her help is on the way. I hear the father's silent cry who just reported his child is missing and it's dark outside. I hear the child scream for help because her mother's boyfriend is beating her mom again. I do not work your average 9-to-5 job Monday through Friday. I work all hours, sometimes with no breaks. I work every single day. There are no special holidays for me. I miss Thanksgiving, Christmas, and birthdays with my kids. Dispatchers suffer the same amount of trauma as police, firefighters, and EMTs do. I cannot see the scene, but I can hear it. I go through the same amount of training, if not more, as other first responders. My job is not a job. It's a calling that only a few can handle. I show up every day, and I start my shift with a prayer, and when I go home, I say another prayer. I urge you to pass this resolution. We have earned the right to be called first responders. We deserve to be recognized and reclassified. I'm not a clerical worker. I am 911. I am the first responder. Thank you for letting me speak today.
Thank you. Next proponent, please.
Mr. Chair, I have Susan Bomstead.
Susan.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Susan Bomstead, B as in boy, O, M as in Mary, S, T, A, D as in David. I represent the Montana chapter of the Association of Public Safety Communication Officials International, which is APCO. I currently serve as Montana's National Executive Council representative. I'm a retired public safety professional. My history, experience, and career span nearly 35 years at a 911 center, beginning as a public safety telecommunicator or a 911 dispatcher and holding positions as shift supervisor, manager, and 911 coordinator. I stand in support of House Joint Resolution 14. Ms. Burdick provided history and congressional efforts for the 911 Saves Bill in the U.S. Congress, so I won't repeat that, but I can illustrate that the 911 dispatcher is not a secretarial position. The public safety dispatcher plays a critical role in the safety of responders and the public requiring emergency assistance. The call taker is literally the first person on the scene of the incident being reported. For the lifeline between the public and emergency responders in the field by gathering and providing information to ensure the safest response to the incident. They need to be able to answer and prioritize multiple emergent and non-emergent telephone lines, send fire or medical field personnel, and dispatch law enforcement officers, sometimes simultaneously under a very specific set of policy guidelines. By acting quickly and according to protocol, lives can be saved. Mistakes can potentially result in loss of life. They operate sophisticated communication equipment, including computer-aided dispatch programs, multi-lane telephone systems, and they're responsible to monitor and interact on multiple radio channels. They're trained in emergency medical dispatch, which is a protocol for triaging patients to send the appropriate personnel and give life-saving instructions to the caller. Many public safety telecommunicators have additional duties, such as staffing a police desk and taking reports. Some even have to monitor jail cells and parking lots on a screen. If you've ever watched the 911 shows, you've seen the dispatcher at a console resembling a cockpit, surrounded by screens with flashing lights, talking on the phone and the radio, and their coworkers simultaneously to save a life. The coordination is phenomenal. Even though we aren't face-to-face with the caller, the immediate intervention of a well-trained 911 dispatcher can make or break the outcome of an incident. In the future, dispatch centers will be required to accept and screen text messaging and pictures and video and other forms of data provided by cell phone callers. This requirement is referred to as Next Generation 911. Public safety telecommunicators will be tasked with processing and relaying information to field responders in a whole new realm, putting even more responsibility and accountability or stress on the dispatcher and increasing liability for the dispatch center. The job description dictates that it be included in the protective services occupation classification, not with the secretarial staff. House Joint Resolution 14 will lend support for proper recognition and classification at the federal level. I ask for a due pass on House Joint Resolution 14. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no informational witnesses in the room, can we get the informational witness on Zoom, please?
Mr. Chair, we have Jessica Graham.
I apologize. I must have raised my hand at the wrong time. I was a proponent.
Okay.
No further people on Zoom, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Question for Ms. Burdick, please. Yeah, Ms. Burdick.
Yes.
Can you tell us how many hours a year that you're required to do different kinds of training? I think that part was missed.
How many times or how many hours in a year? Okay, like with training somebody new?
No, how much, Mr. Chair, Ms. Burdick, no, how many hours are required a year for your dispatch group?
Okay.
Additional training.
Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't hear. I'm sorry if my microphone, probably not. If you could just repeat that last part, please.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Burdick, excuse me, the the amount of hours that you're required for training or your staff is required to do training per year?
Oh, per year. Yes.
Yes.
Thank you for clarifying that. For our particular staff, the requirements can be up to 100 hours, if not more, per dispatcher per year. We are a small PSAP, so we are very aggressive with training, but it's not the same for all PSAPs or not for all dispatch centers across Montana, nor the United States. There is no consistency in that particular requirement. So it really is what an agency determines that they need to have for training in their center. We do EMD, which is emergency medical dispatch. So we do have that. That is a requirement. There are recertification requirements. And POST also does require that public safety officers have 20 hours every 2 years of ongoing training also for dispatch centers and public safety officers. So it really does vary an awful lot. Like I said, we are very aggressive in our center as far as training goes. So as much training as we can get our hands on, we're absolutely going to implement. So I would say at a minimum 100 hours per year, but it can definitely be much more than that.
Thank you, Ms. Burdick. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Appreciate it.
Okay, Senator Gere.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for the sponsor. Mr. Chairman, Representative, I believe in your opening you said that they work 24/7. Surely they don't work 24/7. They have shift work, right?
Mr. Chair and Senator, correct.
Okay.
They individually don't, but they're as an outfit, they're open 24/7.
Okay, good. Follow up?
Follow up.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, you're saying that they're not a clerical position, but would you say they're the same as the hands-on responders are?
Mr. Chair and Senator, in that same general classification that they mentioned when we're talking about the folks that are working at TSA and the crossing guards and some of the other folks that are in this general category, the answer is yes. These folks have to work longer than first responders that we classify now for their career. They work the same shift. They deal with many of the same events, and no, they aren't exposed to some of the same dangers at the scene per se, but the stress, mental health issues, etc., are definitely the same, if not worse in some cases. Mr. Chair.
Follow up. Mr. Chairman, Representative, but really we need to classify theirs is the mental, emotional, it's not the physical then.
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes.
Okay. Follow up.
Mr.
Chairman, Representative, protective service occupation. What's the definition for that?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I don't have it in front of me, but I can certainly get it to the committee.
Okay, follow up. Mr. Chairman, Representative, is that the same as the police, the sheriffs, the firefighters, protective service occupation?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I'll provide the committee with the entire definition and classification category, if that would work.
Okay. Follow up.
Mr.
Chairman, Representative, if they go into this different category, I mean, does that allow them to go into a different pension plan? I mean, what are the benefits then?
Mr. Chair, Senator, good question. And the answer is really that is just the beginning. The answer is no, it doesn't change their retirement status or anything. What it does is it begins for us to say when we're examining the work that they do and when their employers are examining the work that they do, they recognize that they're in a different classification. So this is really the beginning of both that national movement to try to reclassify them, recognize them for their work. They hope to do additional education, both for their local folks and for state legislators so that we understand better the work that they do in anticipation of being recognized for that, changing working conditions. And I can go into more of those details if you like. But it's really the beginning of a process to really understand and appreciate their work differently. But this classification doesn't change that in and of itself.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Senator Kerry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the sponsor, Representative Garner, Mr. Chair, what union represents them right now?
Mr. Chair and Senator, I don't know what bargaining unit, or if, and my guess is they're in different bargaining units because you have the Highway Patrol has PSAPs. You have some of the reservations host PSAPs. Counties do. I think you had a representative from an association that was on here. My guess is it's different bargaining units, but I'm not sure.
Okay, just a follow-up, Mr. Chair. I guess if they belong to a bargaining union, you would think the bargaining unit would go to the fight for them and get them reclassified because, you know, they're totally not in the correct classification. And, you know, so I guess that would be the spot to start.
Sorry, Mr. Chair and Senator. I think the problem is they're represented by different ones. That's part of why I'm here, why we're asking support from the legislature, is because to make it a unified effort and not to have a disparate effort from different bargaining units or different groups. We're here. There's 298,000 of these folks out there in the nation doing this work. There are several hundred in our state that are telecommunicators. And while they have a general association, because they're in, you know, working for different employers and in, you know, potentially in different bargaining units, the reason I'm here and that we're here to try to send this message to our federal delegation is to speak in one voice for them, Senator.
Mr. Chair, just a little follow-up. This is just a comment. When I belonged to the union, shop steward went to fight for you. And I would expect that in Montana, there's not that many different unions that represent these individuals. I would venture to say you're probably only in two different unions, or maybe even only in one. And I would very much think that that's definitely where they should be starting. I have nothing against a resolution, but it doesn't get any results. And I would rather have some results than a resolution.
Mr. Chair and Senator, I think the answer is we should be doing both. And I hope both are bargaining units, but I'm not here on behalf of their bargaining unit today. I'm here as a representative representing those people that I've worked with for the last 35 years and whose work I appreciate to ask this body to be a voice for them. So I hope you're right and that their bargaining units are doing that as well. But I think it's incumbent upon us to speak up for them as well and to ask for this change and to be part of this process as we educate our representatives more about the work they do. Mr. Chair.
Senator Cuff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Garner. So, in a nutshell, what is the desired outcome?
Mr. Chair and Senator, it's more than one thing. The first thing is to change this general classification so they're recognized for the work that they do. The second is to then educate our legislators and their local decision makers as well. We're not the only ones that we're trying to present that information, right? Educate folks about the difficult job they have, how it's changed, and what we ask and require them to do. Because in the long term, they want to do things like change their working conditions. And I'll give you a quick example. When I started, it was a Selectric, is that the name for it? Typewriter with the ball on it, right? And a, you know, two phones sitting on the desk there, and a you know, and a single printer. Now we ask them to do, to watch multiple screens, take multiple information in to do, you know, they take certifications to do CPR, talk people through CPR and deal with all kinds of different emergency things they didn't have to do to locate them on the map, find the closest responder. It's a much more complicated, stressful job than it ever was. And so this is part of that process, and the outcome would be that we recognize them for the work and that their working conditions, big category, eventually will reflect the work, more accurately reflect the work that they do now.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any more questions? Senator Pope, were you still on cue?
I think I wanted to, Mr. Chair, I'll ask a quick question of the sponsor, please. Mr. Chair, Mr. Sponsor, I welcome the Senate and Energy, and I wanted to, you may have already answered this in a variety of different ways, but my question was going to be, you know, we passed this resolution. Are there things at the state level in terms of our good telecommunicators in state and the way they relate to our state government, not the Fed and the classifications, are our classifications at the state level properly in place as well? Or is this the beginning of a longer conversation about how our state government is organized? Thank you.
Mr. Chair and Senator, thanks for the question. And that's a good question. And the answer is, that it's the beginning of that conversation, because we really have only one place in state law where first responders are really defined or identified clearly, and it really doesn't apply to these folks or some of the classification work that they need to do. So we haven't clearly defined that in terms of, you know, their work status or benefits, those kinds of things. And they, as I think most of you know, they're in a different retirement system, for instance, than either the Highway Patrol, the sheriffs, or the police officers are, et cetera, so that there's not a definition kind of that applies to all those things. So it's a part of a bigger conversation to try to help them be identified, as I said, for the work that they do, so that folks will understand that when they're looking at their, and I'm going to use the term again, working conditions, they aren't looking at them as clerical workers.
Thank you, Representative Turner. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Temple.
Yeah, Mr. Vice Chair, I want to thank the representative for bringing this. I spent 18 years in a small community, and these people not only are saving lives and whatever, but they're community members. And when something happens in a small community, it affects everybody, and these are some of the first people that are affected, and they actually live with it. So I fully support this, and I thank the representative for bringing it. Thank you much.
Thank you. Any more questions? Senator Kerry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Representative Garner again, would you be open for an amendment on this?
Mr. Chair and Senator, whenever I come to the Senate, the answer is always yes, because I recognize what body I'm in. And, you know, this bill is the committee's bill. And the only thing I would ask for anybody considering that is to maybe talk to Ms. Burdick, who's been part of this, you know, leading this effort, just to run that by them so that, you know, I think there's a good understanding. That would just be my ask if you're considering one.
I'm hoping she's still online. But on page 2, line 25, where you ask the Secretary of State to send a copy of the resolution to the President, the Speaker, the House, the majority and minority leaders in the House and the U.S. Senate, and each member of the Montana congressional delegation, why would you not send it to each county commissioner?
Mr. Chair and Senator, I hate acknowledging a good idea when I didn't think about it myself, but that's probably a good idea and I didn't think about it myself. Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Any more questions from the committee? Okay, seeing none, Representative, would you care to close on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If it's okay, I'll just close from here, and I'll make sure I get that definition information back to the committee, and I appreciate the good hearing. A couple of things that I would ask the committee to consider about this resolution, and the first is imagine when we call them what we're asking them to do, right? Just think of the list that I mentioned before. Think of the expectations we have for them when we call them. Now this time, they're calling us. And here's what they're asking. They're not asking for money, right? They're not asking us to move heaven and earth. They're asking us to put a name on a resolution and send it to our national delegation to say recognize them for the work that they've done. What I'm here to ask you to do today is to do that for the hundreds of people doing this job out here. They're going to be there at 3 o'clock Sunday morning doing that work. They're going to be ready to help us answer our questions and send help to us. I'm asking you this time when they call us, let's be there for them. And with that, I would urge a due pass on H.J. 14. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes the hearing for H.J. 14.
Okay, members of the committee, we will, where's my news sheet? Okay, I thought I had it here, but I got the wrong one. Tuesday, we're going to do executive action on every open bill we got. The ones we heard today, the ones we heard Tuesday. So we'll do exec on all those and catch up. Tuesday, we have two bills. Did I leave that sheet over there? Yeah, you probably, yeah.
That's the one you wrote.
Then Tuesday, we will hear revised laws include renewable hydrogen and repeal a renewable portfolio. And then we'll do, like I say, executive action on everything we had today and last Tuesday. If there's no more to be brought before this committee, this committee is adjourned. Could you?